the thing that you created might be someone's favorite fill in the blank. And that favorite thing may have been the distraction that they needed after someone put a grenade under their Humvee. I'm Dan Votto. This is my 5 minutes. Welcome to my podcast. As I promised you last week, I'm going to be telling you a story from Comic-Con. Now, let's start with what is Comic-Con? I know everybody's heard it about it. It's in pop culture references everywhere. Every once in a while, in a sort of a geek-related TV show, you'll see an episode that takes place at Comic-Con. And usually those things are filmed in like a ballroom somewhere with fake booths. They're not actually filming at Comic-Con. When I talk about Comic-Con, I am talking about Comic-Con International in San Diego. It's the biggest in the United States, and it sets the bar for everything. It is a pop culture mecca. Thousands of people go to this thing. It takes up for sure the entirety of downtown San Diego as the convention is sort of spilled out from the convention center onto the streets, and there are offsite things. One year there were even kind of pseudo ride. There was like a zip line ride over Springfield. Yeah, the Springfield from The Simpsons. It's huge. The local paper took a poll when the San Diego Chargers of the NFL were wanting to build a football stadium in downtown San Diego that might threaten whether Comic-Con stayed or not, because it was going to impact on their ability to expand the convention center. They asked people in San Diego what was more important to them, the San Diego Chargers or the San Diego Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con won. I need you to understand what a big and huge event this was. And we went every year. And for a while, we were taking up 1,000 square feet of space. And this was in the heyday of Johnny the Homicidal Maniac and in the years after Invader Zim had come out, where we were attracting a lot of attention anytime Jonan Vasquez was in our booth. And we would have lines of people that would wrap around the entirety of our booth that would clog up the aisles. And this is not unique to us, but I mean, it was unique for us because we didn't have anybody else that even remotely matched in the popularity that Jonan had. And it became apparent after a few years, as it became bigger and bigger, that there were some people who were a little overly enthusiastic about the possibility of meeting Jonan, and people would come and line up like sometimes hours before he was going to be in the booth just to make sure that they got a chance to meet him. And yeah, I understand that. And it was kind of cool, to be honest with you, to have something that was that popular and that big for us being a very small publisher. But every once in a while, you'd see somebody in line and you'd think, that person might be trouble. That person might be a problem. And only once or twice have I ever had to result to getting physical with anyone. That's not the story I'm telling today. I don't remember the year this happened. Jonan was going to be doing a signing in the SLG publishing booth. And as I just mentioned, people were showing up early and I was trying to get most of them to come back later. But a few people didn't leave. And in particular, there was one young woman who was very, very excited at the possibility of meeting Jonan. And she seemed nice enough. I didn't worry too much about it. And I just let her stand there for a bit because she was pleasant enough. But then as the time got closer, she got just a little bit more and more, I would say, overly excited. So I decided I was going to go talk to her and kind of like suss out. I was going to try and figure out what she was all about. So I went and I introduced myself, and I did that a lot. I would talk to people in the lines because they're people who were buying our books and helping me feed my family. So I was very appreciative for those people who would show up and do that. This person, I didn't know whether I needed to worry about them or not. And so I just wanted to find out who they were. So I introduced myself. She introduced herself back. And I said, yeah, I guess you're very excited to meet Joan. And she's like, oh, when I heard I was going to be in San Diego during this time, I bent over backwards to get a ticket to get in because I really wanted to meet him. And I'm like, oh, okay. So where are you from that you didn't come from San Diego? I was like, well, it's not where I'm from. It's where I came from. And I said, oh, okay. Well, where did you come from? She goes, well, I was deployed in Afghanistan. I'm like, oh, and so you got leave and they sent you to San Diego. So it's kind of like that. I'm like, okay. And so I'm thinking like, did you desert to come to? So what do you mean by that? You're not on leave. It's like, well, I got sent home. You got sent home? And she was a Marine. And so the Marine sent you home from Afghanistan. Can I ask why? So this young woman was part of a group who was tasked with in the idea of, you know, hearts and minds type of thing. They had a unit, a small number of people who were medics, which is what she was, who would provide medical care to locals and sometimes in remote places. And this person, being a woman, of course, got the task of helping out women. So her reward for this and her unit's reward for this was that she was targeted. They were blown up by the Taliban, by an IED. Fortunately, none of them were killed. Some of them were hurt. The Marines later determined that she in particular was a target because she was helping women. And I still find it difficult to tell this story, which is why I felt like I really wanted to tell it when I started this podcast. She was targeted. Maybe all she did was hand somebody a tampon. So they said, you need to go home. We're going to reassign you because they're out for you personally. You are not just her, but other people as well. Because you made the cardinal sin of providing medical care to women. She told that story and I sat kind of dumbfounded, and Jonan was just entering the booth to sit down and sign, and I kind of paused on that for a second, and I regret my answer to this day, although I stand by what I said. I just looked at her and was like, you went through all that and you're nervous to meet this guy? I don't get it. So whatever, but we're moving you right to the front of the line. Thank you for your service. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, but and I don't know if I told Jonan why she was special, that I was cutting her in front of people. She got her signature and she was really happy and she went off. I never saw her again during the rest of the weekend or ever since. I don't know what happened to this woman. Hopefully she's living a good life somewhere. And I tell this story not to outrage people, right? Although you can feel that sense of outrage. I did. After the Jonan signing was over, I excused myself. I walked back to my hotel room and just cried. I talk a lot in the first couple of episodes about creativity, being a creator, arrogance you need, the ability to move beyond mistakes. This is something to remember. When I started writing comics, professionally, that is when I started writing comics where there was a contract that had my name on it that said Dan Votto, writer, it was something that was a big deal to me. And the very first editor I had was a man named Archie Goodwin, who is sort of a legend in terms of editors. I mean, he's long since passed away. I was very fortunate. I learned a lot from him about how to deal with freelancers. And one of the things, Archie told me a lot of things, but one of the things he told me is that they used to tell people, young writers, that the comic that they're writing might be someone's first ever comic. And you owed it to them to do your best to that person, because that might be the comic that makes them decide to read comics more or not. And I decided to reinterpret it based on the way people reacted to my work. If you're a creative person and you're doing it and you're doing it seriously and you're putting out work on the regular basis, something you wrote, something you sang, something you drew, a poem, anything, you might be someone's favorite creator. And the thing that you created might be someone's favorite fill in the blank. And that favorite thing may have got them through a dark time or seen them through with a happy time. It may have been the distraction that they needed after someone put a grenade under their Humvee. It's something to keep in mind when you're times are dark, that even if you don't have a huge audience, maybe somewhere in that small audience is someone who loves your work and for whom your work means a lot. My name's Dan Votto. This has been My 5 Minutes. Go out there and love somebody's work.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you like this, go give The Unexpected Mentor a try. That was the other podcast I was in. And the thing that got me started on this, that was produced by Emily Parent and is available wherever you get your podcasts. The music that you heard at the beginning and end of this episode was by Neverweather. This is the title track, Blissnitz, from their album, Blissnitz. Be sure to give them a listen, as well as Heart Matter, Dylan Votto's other current project. Next week, I'll be talking about The Grind.